Sportsnet 960.
Thursday morning, 7:06, Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pender. We're on the air live at the Hamptons. Beautiful day here in the city of Calgary. Nice to get out every once in a while here at the golf course, and it is going to be an awesome day. The Canada Sports Hall of Fame having their annual golf event here at the Hamptons. And this is kind of the day where get together, mix, mingle, have some fun. Don't need to wear a tux. No pressure, no speeches. They can actually enjoy themselves. And it's nice that there's kind of extra elements, I suppose, to being inducted. Pleased to welcome the CEO and president of the Hall, Mario Siliano. Good morning, sir. This is so there are no tuxedos, no dress codes. This is, they can kind of just have some fun, lay back a little bit today.
Yeah, exactly. Last night was the night for all the ties and the dresses. All the inductees and honor members were at Canada Sports Hall of Fame having a bit of a party.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see them show up this morning and what kind of shape they're in. But you're right. It's all about fun now. The teams are made up of three players matched up with an honor member and inductee, so they get to golf with them all day long.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's amazing. We have 31 honored members from all over North America here in Calgary, plus the seven inductees from the class of 2016, so it should be a real fun day.
Was there curfew last night?
Well, we were trying to push people up around 10. You say, you know, it's going to come early, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah,
the bus arrives, I think, at 7:30 this morning, so we'll see what kind of shape they're in. But they're troopers.
Yeah.
And keep it in mind, right, some of those honored members are well into their 80s. People like Gary Cowan, you know, one of the best Canadian golfers ever coming out. So, but holy moly, they got energy.
Every year that goes by, more people go in as inductees, and everything just gets bigger and bigger. Is it becoming harder to manage because it's becoming more and more people that you want to bring to every event? The numbers have got to be getting almost staggering now.
Yeah, no, it's actually, thanks to our sponsors, it's actually been working really well. The sponsors do an amazing job for this event, Calgary Sport Tourism Authority, all their help. So that isn't the issue. The hard part is actually getting into the hall. Being inducted now into Canada Sports Hall of Fame, the highest sporting honor in the country, is very difficult. Many, many years ago, a single gold medal in the Olympics would have been an automatic in, and now it's not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
These inductees in the 2016 class are a good example. We're talking multiple gold medals, multiple world championships to get in. So that's the part that's getting really hard. As we continue to produce so many great Canadian athletes across all of the various sports systems, the level of performance has gone up, so it's getting very, very hard. And when you can only induct seven or so in a year,
yeah,
out of all of the athletes, every sport right across Canada, it's tough. So it's a very, very special group.
Is there a bar, or is there a minimum criteria that's used when determining whether somebody is hall worthy or not?
Yeah, there's actually three criteria. The first one is one that most people associate with it, and it's basically the medal count, you know, the statistics, how many goals, whatever the case may be. And so, as I said, it typically now it's multiple national and world championships, whatever the top level for your sport is. But the other two criteria are really what define the honor members. The second criteria is what we call sort of the social values. It's how they went about winning the medals. Did they go about that in a way that demonstrated values that we can learn and benefit from? Teamwork,
yeah,
Dedication, perseverance. So it isn't enough just to win. It's how you win and how we can then look at those stories as great role model opportunities for kids. And the third criteria is really the toughest one, and that's where they've made an impact bigger than their sport. And often that's why you see people being inducted a number of years after their playing career is over. It's their contribution to community. So if you look at this class as well, tremendous charity work for many many years. They've created movements, you know, people like Dr. Frank Hayden. A lot of people don't know. Canadian created the worldwide Special Olympics movement. Huge contributions way beyond their sport. So you put those three criteria together, and that's why it's so hard to get in, but also why the inductees are such a special group of people.
Pinball Clemens, he's one of those guys. He was an athlete, he was a football player, but he's one of those guys, no matter what he would have done professionally as an adult, he would have touched so many people's lives and would have been an inspiration. And I heard you, the room, the temperature in the room changes.
That's right.
As soon as Pinball walks in. I've seen him making speeches. I've seen him earning awards and been around him just in a football setting. There's no one else like Pinball Clemens. The smile and the energy and the warmth that he brings is like no one else.
Yeah, you're right. And yesterday we had a school come into the museum there at Canada Olympic Park, and grade 4 class, 60 kids, and they don't have a clue who pinball is, mm-hmm. right, at that age. And because he was talking to them, and he said, you know, I retired before you were even born. But you should have seen, like, he came in, and it literally, the whole room lit up. And those children, they were just a magnet to him, and they were completely enthralled, because it isn't about knowing what he did, you know, whatever number of years ago. It's about who he is as a person. He was able to connect so immediately with them and share with them. And every message he gave to every kid is, dream big, go for it, you can do it, you can do whatever you want. So you can imagine these kids, right, and this energy, this bundle in front of them, it was amazing to see.
Yeah, and not a Canadian.
Well, he just became a Canadian, right? Yeah, so yeah, not originally a Canadian, but yeah, he talked about that last night. We had a pretty intimate sort of one-on-one with the inductees, and he talked about becoming a citizen and just how much it meant. And he had held off, he said, as a joke, because everybody was telling him to get into politics, and of course you can't get elected if you're not Canadian.
That's so right, yeah.
He used that for an excuse long enough. But when he did get his citizenship, it was very moving, and it brought him to tears last night when he talked about it.
We were talking about Brian Trottier this morning. I grew up, and some of my earliest memories of the game of hockey were when the Islanders were in their mm-hmm. dynasty. And I remember when I found out, I was like, well, he's from Saskatchewan?
Right.
It just did, because it was New York, and it was big, and Stanley Cups, and he was such a big part of that. And then you get a chance to meet him, it's like, yeah, you're a small-town prairie guy that went to the Big Apple in the lights of New York City and won all of these Stanley Cups. And it's another one of those things, his career was over before people, you know, some people will realize. But you go back and you look at the body of work, and it's like, wow, you won 4 there, and you won 2 there, and you won another one there, and a Calder Trophy, and an Art Ross, and a phenomenal career for a guy from small town Saskatchewan.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Yeah, you're right. A lot of people don't know that, and I think because of his Aboriginal background, he's essentially been a dual citizen with the U.S., right? Because of the Aboriginal ancestry, and of course playing in the States, a lot of people sort of, I think, you know, looked at him as American, and yeah, they don't realize he's a good Saskatchewan boy, very true to his roots, and you hear him talk about his induction. You know, he talks about it as it's so special to him because it's his country recognizing him. And, you know, it's just amazing to see that career coming out of small town Saskatchewan. But we're fortunate in Canada, aren't we, in terms of our hockey heroes? You know, they seem to, many of them come from those very modest roots, but they learn those values of hard work and dedication. And it takes them far. And he's a great example. And to my earlier point about the criteria for induction, right? A lot of people don't know. He's been crisscrossing northern Canada, talking to First Nations kids about getting involved in hockey. He started First Nations hockey programs in the north. So very, very few people know the full extent of his community work around trying to encourage First Nation kids to get involved.
Mario Siciliano, the president and CEO of the Canada Sports Hall of Fame. How far out do you begin the homework on now the 2017 class?
Yeah, it's an annual process. So the deadline is January 15th of every year, and anyone can nominate. It's online at sportshall.ca. It's those three questions. You know, what did they accomplish? Mm-hmm. What did they demonstrate value-wise? And how did they impact their country? And you answer the three questions online, and it's in. And so we get nominations fairly regularly throughout the course of the year. And, of course, come November, December, it starts to peak quite a bit. And so by January 15th, we call it a day. That group is then closed off. And then we have a national jury, 16 people from across Canada, includes some of our honor members, people like Mark Tewksbury, Chantal Petitclerc, the Paralympian, and a number of academics and also some sports media folk. And so they evaluate all of the nominations and go through a rigorous procedure. They get together and hammer out, so you can imagine that, you're comparing a para swimmer to an NHL hockey player, and so it's a tough job, but they get it done. And then usually April every year is when we make the national announcement. It's literally a continual year-end process. And what's really important is that people know it doesn't matter how old you are, you can just go in and nominate someone. And this year's class is a fantastic example. There's a young man named Darby. He's a Special Olympian. And he thought, you know what, the founder of the Special Olympics had a lot of meaning to him. So he went online, put in a nomination, and here we are. Frank Hayden's getting the ultimate recognition in sport because of this young Special Olympian. So it doesn't matter who you are. It's just whatever sport hero you believe in, get their name in there. And the committee does a really good job of looking into all of their accomplishments and picking the very, very best every year.
So are you getting out there and hitting it today? Or?
Well, my excuse is that I actually have to organize everything.
Right,
but reason is I'm a horrible golfer.
Yeah. Whatever excuse works,
totally.
Right?
Totally. I got to make sure the water bottles are in the carts or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Something like that. Hey, thanks for dropping by. Congrats, as always, on everything. I love the steam that the Sports Hall has taken on year after year. It's become bigger and obviously more noteworthy, and the fact that it's in Calgary and not Toronto, even better.
Right on. Thanks so much for all your support.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
There you go. He is Mario Siciliano, the CEO and president of the Sports Hall. We'll have more guests join us a little bit later on in the morning, expecting Brian Trottier to swing by, Stephanie Dixon in the para swimming event, three-time Paralympian and multiple world record holder. She will come by. And some other things we need to take care of, like, what you want to talk about. There's real things, and then there's other things that we need to deal with. Fan feedback line is open. Is this the tournament that Rhett freaked out about the eggs? No.
I don't think so.
That was the Flames. The Flames,
because they do that in September, isn't it?
Yeah.
Before the season, they do the big golf tournament.
The Flames Foundation, I believe, being out with the eggs. He was very disappointed.
It's actually quite fine. I'm wearing shorts, sandals. Like, it's not that chilly.
Well, we're kind of inside, though.
Kind of, yeah.
We have a roof overhead.
We're here with the eggs. Anyone need a platter of eggs? Some ham? Omelette?
I'm happy to be outside.
No. Well, he's very tender. He's a delicate, delicate flower. And he needs just the proper amount of watering and shade and sun. And at that point, it was not enough sun. So he began to wilt a little bit.
It was cold that day, apparently. You'd think a kid that grew up in a small town in Saskatchewan would be able to handle it. But again, maybe all that dough makes you soft. I don't know.
I think it was less about the temp, and it was more just, I think he was kind of embarrassed. That
they couldn't find
the
some
athletes
sort of the structure.
Would be walking or milling about, and he was sitting on a lawn chair doing a radio show. I think that's kind of what it
lets
came
you know
down
where
to.
You are in the pecking order.
Yeah.
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 I'm not a fancy pants, but there's a room. So we're sitting outside on this patio under the food tent. People are going to be banging by us, getting eggs and ham. And there's an empty room through a set of doors it's maybe three steps. Everything and everything you want.
Who's losing his mind in the back?
That's Lubardius.
Oh. Omelette?
He was co-hosting that day, and that set him off. He fell off of his chair and enjoyed it a great deal. Speaking of Peter Lubardius, listen tonight, an encore presentation of the mock draft. 6 o'clock tonight as Lubardius and Sam Cosentino walk you through picks 1 through 30 as they see it.
You don't like humans.
Yeah.
That's
if you don't. You don't like humans. They get it done for you with a full explanation and a little bit of controversy here and there, but that's how it works when you put together a mock draft. 7:20, we'll get into the three stars and some other things happening. The Columbus Blue Jackets, will they trade three? And if they do, we know when they'll do it. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Back to Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960.
It's a good one right here.
My mic went on mid-stretch there. I was... Oh, gotta stretch them out.
Beautiful day out here.
It is.
All kinds of famous people in the main clubhouse schmoozing.
Yeah.
They've got us in the snack shack where we can't be seen.
Yeah, they kind of banish us to the halfway house.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine.
Where we belong.
Huge lineup of booze in front of us here.
Never too soon.
Never too late.
Would you like a little Bacardi Black in your coffee there, sir?
I think Cologne would be the fit.
There it is, right there. Right. We're just joking.
We're kidding. It's all right.
No, yeah, no, it's okay.
Still working.
7:29. We'll do the three stars coming up here in a moment. The Columbus Blue Jackets, they, according to Aaron Portsline, beat writer for the Dispatch, had him on earlier this week. Was it earlier this week?
We had him last week, I think.
I don't know. When we had him on, we were talking about pick number 3. Would they move it? Would they not move it? Wouldn't it be great if the Flames could get up there? Is basically what it comes down to.
Gosh, it would be.
According to Portsline and talking to Jarmo Kekalainen, the general manager, this is the tweet from Portsline. Columbus Blue Jackets wouldn't trade number 3, even if the offer is worthy, until the first two players are off the board. So they will wait until the very final moment, until the pressure point is at its most intense, before deciding whether or not to trade that pick.
So you could offer them number 6, Giordano, Bennett, Gaudreau, Gillies, and they would fax it through. They wouldn't sign that thing.
We'll get back to you.
We'll get back to you.
I just want to make sure that somehow Matthews and Lion A are not available at 3.
No, is it about that, or is it about waiting to that clock ticking to 12 o'clock?
It's
right? I think it's about that.
Yeah, it's about the clock ticking down. It's about trying to get the most out of the asset if, in fact, they decide to do it. Which makes sense. I understand it. I get it.
Get guys in the moment. Pressure.
Yeah.
It'll be a fun draft. I can't wait. I really think this is going to be one of the better Friday nights that I imagine we'll see big trades Friday night. I think there's a lot of intrigue around 3, 4, 5 in terms of what happens there because of everything you've talked about. Columbus could move it.
Edmonton
certainly could do a million things at 4.
The more you look at the Oilers at 4, the less it makes sense for them to use that pick. Unless you really believe that Sergachev or Ulevi are a franchise blue liner. If you feel that that's the case, then do it. But other than that, to select Matthew Tkachuk or Dubois, another center, I don't know that it makes much sense for them.
The only way drafting Tkachuk or Dubois makes sense for them, in my opinion, is let's say they trade Taylor Hall to Anaheim for Lindholm. Just something along those lines. They go get that defenseman they need. Now, all of a sudden, okay, here's a big power winger. And that would fit really nicely with this, all of a sudden, really nice collection of big, strong wingers. Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
Maroon with a nice little post-deadline run with the Oilers. You know, they're in on Lucic, apparently, is what we'll hear when the courting period starts on the 25th. I can see them doing that if they're going to trade an Everly, trade a Hall, trade a Nugent Hopkins. But if they aren't, there's no room for these guys. And I understand best player available, but at some point you have to understand the need is so glaring on the blue line.
And specifically, if you trade Hall, for example, for a defenseman, he will get you your best return. We've talked about this many times. I don't see it any other way. If you can get your blue liner or a blue liner that is a legitimate 1-2-3, then I guess it makes sense to take a Tkachuk perhaps. And I know that there's a lot of people in Edmonton that just they love Tkachuk. That's exactly what they want. They want a big winger who's nasty and plays with a chip, and he's kind of got, you know, the world's against him and plays that way. Sure, he'd fit right in. The thing that would, so you'd have Cassian and you'd have Maroon. Now, Maroon had a great start as an Oiler.
I don't know what kind of offense he's going to continue to put up. I think you're a little limited in what you're going to get from Zach Kassian. So they're two big bodies. I just don't know what you're getting in terms of scoring from them.
I'll say this. If they're going to play Maroon on McDavid's line, he'll be fine. If they play him elsewhere, I don't know what they're going to get out of him. I mean, Nail Yakupov looked like a good NHLer for the exact amount of time he was on McDavid's line. The other moments, no. Nah.
What are they doing with him? Expansion draft?
Oh, who wants him? I'm sorry. Like, he's a flight risk. He hasn't had much success in the league. He's going to want to raise. I don't know that that's an attractive asset at this point. I mean, trade him. What are you going to get? You're certainly not protecting him. If you go through the exercise, of, like, General Fanager, the website has a little thing you click and you can protect guys. It's not easy. Like, if you try to do the Calgary Flames, you get eight guys. That's all you can protect. So you're Monahan, Gaudreau, Bennett, one other forward in there. Is there another guy? Like, I personally go Backlund, but I don't know that that's a slam dunk for everyone else. Mm-hmm. And then on the blue line, you're thinking, okay, Geo, Brody, Hamilton for sure. Like, there's seven guys in your goalie. Like, there's these.
Now, what's
of course they're not protecting Yakupov.
Now, I know there's the equation where you can keep 10.
It depends how you break it up between forwards and goalies and D, I believe.
So I don't know.
It's the exercise is worth going through, is my point.
It's worth going through it. So much will change for a lot of teams because they're going to start to now to navigate and try and massage their roster to avoid all of that. When it comes back to the Flames, I don't know what they can do. I know that it's not that it's frustrating, but they're working hard.
Yeah.
I've been in touch with a couple of the guys, and they're grinding, but right now it's a lot of, well, we're going to wait till Friday. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. There's no pressure to do anything right now.
That's when you get to see who's bluffing and who's not, right? If you've got a deal on the table for Marc-Andre Fleur that they don't like, they say it's not enough, well, what happens when pick five is made and you pick up the phone? Does it change all of a sudden? Well, you know what? I guess this will work. Or maybe we'll sweeten it with, we'll take this prospect off you.
There's that impatience that always comes, right?
And it's the chess game. I mean, you can only trade six as long as that pick hasn't been made. Yeah. So right up until your last moment, okay, take it or leave it. Here it is.
Wasn't it Thursday last year prior to the draft that they did the Hamilton deal? Wasn't it the day after the awards and the day prior to round number one?
See, was it day after or day before? I don't even remember.
Yeah, either way, that deal, and it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
No one expected. And Hamilton maybe would be on the market, but Boston certainly wouldn't trade him. And then it happened. So I wonder how many of those potentially exist. We keep hearing Tyson Berry's name. Shattenkirk is a big one in St. Louis. He wants Petrangelo money, and I don't know that the Blues can give it to him.
Well, and they've got Parayko, who nicely slides into that second pairing and gives them offense. Shattenkirk's an interesting one that ties right in with the Oilers conversation because apparently number four wouldn't be far off from getting them Shattenkirk, I think. At least, you know, that's the start of a conversation, right?
If I'm St. Louis, I'd be pleased.
Then you get whatever you want there.
You have them for one more year. Now, granted, it's a year you're going to try and win a cup, but then there's no way you're keeping him.
I don't think they are. And if you're Edmonton, how can you not keep that guy if you get him? If there's one area you have to spend and overpay, defense.
One person says day of, one text says day before.
Well, there you are. Thanks, text line.
Yeah, thank you.
Maybe it was right at midnight? Like, what day is it?
Yeah, it depends, right? Yeah.
What time zone are we in?
I just remember being in Vegas and when it all came
so it had to
flying
have been
through.
Then.
So I seem to think it was the day before, but it really doesn't matter. I'm just, in terms of context, kind of thinking about it. The way the rules read, do we have to protect Gillies? You will not. It's if the first and second year pros and drafted unsigned players are exempt. So he would be he'd be exempt from having
second
to protect. Yeah. He would be a second year pro.
Another one that I'd heard, Barry's name in it all year has been in these rumors. I believe there was a Colorado, I don't want to say statement, but they were letting it known that they're not just going to trade this guy for the sake of trading him. They're going to try to re-sign him. But a name that's starting to pop up now is Matt Duchene, which is interesting. You've got Landeskog. You've got McKinnon. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Colorado doesn't like signing these amazing young players. They let Ryan O'Reilly go. They're notoriously cheap and difficult to negotiate with. But wouldn't that be a nice piece to add if you're a team that's close.
Well, there's some interesting things that play, because I've heard kind of the same thing. They have Tyson Berry, and although we've heard probably going to keep him now, going to try, and as you should, goodness, but they would move Duchesne in the event they needed a blue liner. So it's kind of counterproductive. Keep Barry if you can, and keep Duchesne, rather than lose Barry and then lose Duchesne to bring one defenseman back and maybe a forward that's not as good. I don't know. Maybe there, you never know what is going on within a dressing room or within a team. Matt Duchesne seems like a great kid and a heck of a hockey player, but he wouldn't be the first great kid and hockey player to get moved, if in fact that came to be. I can't get a read in Colorado.
Well, they're baffling, and it's too bad because I think that could be one of the flagship franchises in this league, and it just isn't. It used to be. Think of the late 90s when, you know, Art Lee was coaching there, and you had Sakic and Forsberg and Blake, Foote, Waugh. Why isn't this one of the marquee franchises? Well, because they're cheap. Yeah. And Stan Kroenke, the guy that owned the Rams and moved them to St. Louis to L.A., there's your owner. He seems more interested in looking at the bottom line of his, you know, the financial statement of the club than winning, which is a shame. It's a great hockey market. They have college hockey there. They've always supported hockey back to the Rockies days. And yet they're just, they seem like a team, not a special team at all anymore.
Obviously, we're going to have round one for you tomorrow night. We're going to have the guys are live from Buffalo. We'll get some people on tomorrow morning as well. And our mock draft with Lubardius and Cosentino will run again tonight. That'll go at 6 o'clock. Right now, 7:39, time for the three stars.
All right, it's time for the morning after three stars of the night on Sportsnet 960.
The morning after three stars of the night brought to you by Lone Star Mercedes-Benz. Upgrade your van fleet with a minimum of $4,000 off the purchase of any new 2016 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Visit MercedesBenzVansCalgary.ca.
Going to start with Patrick Kane. Credit where it's due. First American to win the Hart Trophy, and very quietly, look at the list that he's got. Three Stanley Cups, has a Conn Smythe, now has a Hart Trophy, a Ted Lindsay, won the Calder Trophy.
Scoring title, yeah.
And got the Art Ross. Not bad. I know a lot of the people look at the Jonathan Toews because of the Olympic medals and all of that, and that is there. But certainly not to be outdone, Patrick Kane, with a couple of pretty good seasons, is added to his haul.
Not bad for an undersized forward, right?
Mm.
Always too small.
Second star, Baltimore Orioles. Don't like to give them credit, but they are tearing the cover off the ball, and one of the guys responsible, Mark Trumbo.
And here's Trumbo to get the bottom of the second star. Fly ball into right center. This ball is well hit. This ball is way back there. This ball is gone. A home run. A Trumbo Jumbo. And this game is all tied up.
It's Trumbo Jumbo. Yeah. That's his 21st home run of the year. Ties him for the league lead with Nolan Arenado. He had 22 bombs all of last season. Has 21 before the end of June.
Oh. That team can crush the ball. Davis, Alvarez, him, Machado, it's spooky.
And finally, I don't know, the tournament, the teams involved, even the language, I'm not sure where it all falls into place, but this earns a star just because.
Selvig, 3-2, MA, for the team, MA,
So where does that rank amongst the Bonino goal, the Donskoy goal?
I'm telling you, it's better if you envision him being handcuffed and dipped into a vat of acid.
See, I imagine being electrocuted for some reason. Like the electrocution?
This is my segment. It's acid.
All right, acid.
If in the Pinder Report you want to do electrocution, that's fine. But for the purposes of this, it is a... It's a big vat of acid that is absolutely singeing. It's so hot. Help me, please. Please help me.
My flesh is being eaten by this acid. Please help.
My undercarriage is burning as we speak.
I've lost a limb. It's melted.
Yes. That's your three stars.
The Morning After, three stars of the night, brought to you by Lone Star Mercedes-Benz. For your next camper, toy hauler, passenger, cargo, or 4x4 van, visit Lone Star Mercedes-Benz. Get your new van today. Visit mercedes-benz-vans-calgary.ca.
7:43, we are live at the Hamptons Golf Course. It is the annual golf event for the Canada Sports Hall of Fame. Special guest to join us when we come back, the great Brian Trottier, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Since Warner gets 4 months off every summer, we have to change the name of the show for a while. Thanks, Rhett. Nice effort. Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pinder, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The annual golf event that coincides with the Canada Sports Hall of Fame every year, new inductees, and they get a chance to come out and mix and mingle. Last night, very fancy, very frou-frou ties and wine and fancy dinner, and today it's, shorts and cans of beer. That's the... Now, Brian Trottier, which do you relate more to?
The shorts and beer. I'm a shorts and beer guy.
Yeah.
That hotty-totty stuff is not my bag at all.
Yeah.
It was really fun. It was really fun. A fun evening. Really lots of lot of chance to, like, mingle. It's really a fun group, the class of 2016, and just getting a chance to meet their families and get to know more about them, because you know their stories, but it's their families. That's the fun part for me, you know, the children and the grandchildren and that kind of stuff. And Pinball's such a colorful fella.
Yeah.
And the ladies are so inspiring, and they're just down-to-earth people. It's just kind of Canadian hospitality at its finest here in Calgary, and you know, kind of hanging out with the high class group. But the former inductees were there. We had Serge Savard and Pat Stapleton, so it was wonderful visiting with them last night. You don't get a chance to see players you played against or watched on TV when you were a kid, but they're just great guys. You know, sharing hockey stories. So no, it's a fun evening. So it'll be a great day here. We've got nice blue skies. Another friendly day, whacking that ball. It'll beat me up out there, I'm sure, but I'm a shorts and beer guy.
Talking about hockey stories, you have to have enough stories to fill a book or two, because you start to you sit down, it's like, okay, Trottier, he was there for all four in the aisle. Yeah, I think so. Now, he was in Pittsburgh, was there for one? Oh, no, he was there for both, and then there was Colorado. Geez, guy's got 7 cups, he's got a Calder, and he's got... The experiences that you have gone through for a small-town prairie boy, you are small-town guy done good.
Well, those things are so much fun. But the side stories are the real, real fun. Those are the colorful stuff. Like, playing hockey with Tiger Williams, lots of Tiger Williams stories. Playing hockey with...
None of which you can tell right now when it comes to Tiger.
Oh, probably. You know, it's really kind of funny. Like, Tiger, we're playing an old-timers game, and he out of the blue, we're getting dressed, and he goes, Trot. So, yeah, he goes, a dog knows when you're going to shoot it. And the whole room just looks at Tiger. And I'm like, where does that come from? I said, what do you mean, Tiger? He goes, well, a friend of mine had this old dog, and he just didn't have the heart to put it down. It was just in rough shape. It was tired, and that time, he said, would you come out and shoot it? I said, sure. I said, I drove over the hill. There's that dog. I reach in, grab the gun. There's that dog rubbing on my leg, looking up, you're not going to shoot me, are you? And Tiger, I said, you shoot? He said, no, I just didn't have the heart. And Billy Smith was listening to this, and he goes, Tiger, I have a great idea for you. Put a little peanut butter on the end of a shotgun. And that dog's just looking at you see, that's the reaction. It's so funny because the whole room exploded just like that. Like, you pull both barrels. That dog dies a happy life. I was like, oh, my God, these two guys are just calling. And they hated each other on the ice. And they're drinking beer and telling stories. And I said, I'm just like a wallflower, just listening to these guys. And these guys were hilarious.
Well, didn't they hate everybody? Because Billy had no friends that weren't wearing Islanders colors.
As long as
Islander
he didn't
colors.
Go in his crease. Yeah, he whacked his own teammates if he went in the crease. Like,
yeah.
I was back-checking one time in Washington. And, geez, we're told to back-check right to the crease. take him right to the net. And all of a sudden, my ankle goes numb. I said, Smitty, that was me you whacked. He goes, well, stay out of my crease. And I'm like, oh, I get it. So, like, years later, yeah. when Gretzky and those guys got whacked up at Edmonton, the reporters are coming in to me and saying, you know, what do you think? You know, your goalie whacking, you know, Gretzky and Anderson, whatever. And I said, well, you know, I said, like, you whacked me one time. I was just back to him. I was his teammate. So, as far as I'm concerned, the opposition's crazy to go in that crease. But he's, no, he was a competitor. He and Tiger were are just two of my best friends. Love him as teammates. Even more important, they're just great, great guys. Like, Tiger's a great, great husband, great, great father, great grandfather. And I've done so many events with Tiger. And he was actually the guy that pulled me out of, like, I just got released with the Rangers. Tiger says, come on, we're going up to Prince George, British Columbia. I'm like, what's in the heck's in Prince George? He goes, don't even ask. Get on the next flight. So I fly to Prince George. We did like this 12-game tour of old-timers tour. And he and I were telling stories at the back of the bus, and we're sharing. Like, I said, Tiger, thanks a lot. I said, I could be at home moping, but I said, I'm here with the alumni and hanging out and playing some old-timers games. And it was just fantastic. But that's what friends do. You know, you just kind of hang out and keep each other on the high note.
Those Islander teams, I was saying earlier, that was kind of when I was starting to really enjoy hockey and getting into hockey. And you guys were easy to hate.
Oh, yeah.
Because of just the, you had Clark, you know, Clark Gillies was just a mean son of a gun. And if you didn't like Billy Smith, I mean, yep. you loved him or you hated him.
Yep.
What a team.
I
would love
team.
The way that team played with Bossy and the speed, and they would be a good team in today's National Hockey League. Big and little intimidating, but tons of skill.
Well, we just had a confidence about us, and they always really good at, like, we trusted our system, our forecheck, our defensive zone systems were good. Al was really good in letting us be creative with the offensive zone with the puck and the power play. Demanding, but at the same time, you know, we trusted his leadership, but he commanded that room real well, and he was kind of a father figure for all of us. But as a group, we just had a confidence. You want to play a banging game, you want to play a rough and tumble game, you want to play a skating game, we kind of felt like we had the team for it. You know, underrated speed, we had you know, goal scoring, everybody contributed. Obviously, you know, Boss was our leader in that respect, but a lot of guys contributed. You know, a lot of guys, unexpected, John Tinelli, you know, Bobby Nystrom, Bobby Bourne, you know, not Hall of Fame names, but great players that contributed big goals for us at big times. And, you know, you can watch the Penguins. They might shut down Sidney Crosby. They might shut down Malkin's line. But what did they do for Bonino's line? And that's what happened with the Islanders. We had three or four lines that kept coming at you in waves and shorthanded goals. Billy Smith, probably public enemy number one, still in Edmonton. But, you know, just a great team guy, and he come up big saves and money kind of goaltender that you want to have in the net. And I think what happens, I think, over time, when you're winning a lot, is people just don't like the fact that you're winning a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Montreal Canadiens of the late 70s, great teams and good guys. Like, I hung with Steve Shutt and Larry Robinson, Guy Lafleur. They're all great guys, and you just hated them because they're so good, and they're winning all the time. Come on, guys, that's enough winning. You know, let somebody else win. And that's what happens to our Islander teams to a degree. It's like, oh, okay, you guys are good, but you know what? Let someone else. So when Edmonton beat us, it was like, okay, good for you guys. And the fact that we ended up meeting those guys in the finals 2 years in a row, that doesn't happen a lot. So, like, it was, they went back to the blackboard. Maybe we were a year older. Maybe they did something with the playoffs. It was a 2-3-2 that year, and we teased them about that. But it was their time. They're great champions, and they're all good guys, too. The Oilers team, great guys. And if we're going to lose to somebody, I'm so glad it was them. In hindsight, we weren't too happy. We didn't like them in the 80s very much, but we're glad it was them now because they're great champions.
19 consecutive series victories in best of sevens. I don't think that record will ever be flirted with, never mind broken.
It's going to be tough.
That is incredible. For almost 5 years, you were not beaten in a best of seven. And, I mean, just the wars you would have been through, that's incredible.
Well, and with the wear and tear, I think what happened to our team, it was just a lot of wear and tear. So you think about the number of games that we played in the playoffs at those 5 years. And then the previous years before that, we had gone a couple rounds, three rounds. So we were a young team, and we had some resiliency, but we would recover well. But there's just wear and tear. And if you don't have that ability to kind of recover, and you're going right back into it. But we felt we were just kind of bulletproof at the time. But we realized, too, that there was some wear and tear. Guys were, you know, playing with braces on their knees and elbows and shoulders, slings, harnesses. And, you know, we were kind of held together a little bit by Band-Aids and aspirin. But overall, man, I wouldn't change a thing. There's not a guy in that team would want to do it any other way, because there's some things like, you know, the 19 series in a row that are really kind of something to be proud of.
Chatting with Brian Trotche, going into the Canada Sports Hall of Fame, how does it transition to Pittsburgh? Because it's later in your career, and how much hockey did you feel like you had left? And then obviously you get a resurgence with a team that's poised to win a couple cups.
That transition was awkward because I was 34 years old. I'd never played anywhere else. I didn't know what the reception was going to be like in Pittsburgh. But when I drove through the tunnel, Squirrel Hill Tunnel, into the city, I looked at the skyline. Mario was in the hospital, so I drove right to the hospital to let Mario know, hey, big boy, you got to get healthy. I'm here to win a cup. I got a one-year contract, and I think if you're not healthy, we're going to have a tough time doing it. And he's looking at me like I got two heads. I'm, of course I want to get healthy. And he came back.
So you signed as a free agent
there?
Free
agent, yeah.
Okay.
And I had signed a one-year deal with Craig Patrick. Craig was trying to give me all these bonuses, and I said, I want one bonus. I want to win Stanley Cup, and if you give me a bonus for that, he goes, no, we'll do something cumulative. Every round we'll give you the money. I said, that's fine too, but I said, I really want the bonus for the Stanley Cup. And I said, I want the same money Mario gets. He said, I can't give you that kind of money. I said, I'm here to win a cup. So I negotiated a little bit less than Mario, but it was really kind of fun going through that whole process. But the appreciation factor was really kind of the fun thing. Bob Johnson was our coach, and every day he made it fun for me. The city of Pittsburgh, didn't matter what little thing I did, they would cheer. It's like, all right, we got this lucky Trotche fellas on our team, and he's bringing this leader. And I said, really kind of fun. The players in the locker room, they're like, what do we expect this next round? Like, what's going on this next round? And they'd be like big ears and big eyes, and I'm like, Paul Coffey
right,
and I
yeah,
are
yeah.
sitting there telling stories about, you know, winning cups, and Joey Mullen, and these guys are just like, it's like a round table. But they wanted to know what to anticipate. We're like, oh, we've got to ramp it up, boys. You know, if you think you're playing some hockey now, you got to get even better the next round. So that was so much fun. And these guys are like, we're best buddies for the rest of our life. You know, like that bond, once you go through a playoff and you win a Stanley Cup, you know, Kevin Stevens is having some tough times right now.
Yeah.
There's not one of us that wouldn't rally for him and do something for his family. And that's kind of the funnest part about winning a championship. Yeah, you get a fancy little Stanley Cup ring, but it's the memories and those little bonds. And I think for me, making the transition to Pittsburgh was the appreciation factor. And at a later time in my career, and feeling that enthusiasm, that young enthusiasm, having Jaromir Jagr on the team, Kevin Stevens, Mark Recchi, young kids that were just, they were our energy. And I was kind of like, I felt like I was a kind of maybe the engine, the front of the locomotive in New York. And in Pittsburgh, I was kind of the caboose, keeping everybody on the track. Okay,
yeah,
boys,
yeah.
Get back in line here. And they were great. The team, the locker room was really good. Bob was super. The coach, Craig Patrick, was really good.
What was it like getting Mario back? Because that was an emotional time, because he's got the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He is sick. Still, at that point, the best player in the game. What were the emotions like when he came back?
Oh, it's pretty powerful. Like, Mario is a unique fella. He carries himself with such grace, and he doesn't complain about anything. So when he walks in the locker room, he's just got a big man's presence. Then beyond that, he's got this regalness that's really kind of...
He really does.
Powerful.
Yeah.
And he doesn't speak very much, but it was just comical. I said, Mario, when you come, we just say, hey, let's go, boys, and just see the reaction of the team. Because he didn't say a lot. And he looked at me one time, he walked in the room, winked, and he goes, let's go, boys. And the whole room, like, grabbing their skates and getting ready. Like, Mario said, let's go. Fix it up. Hurry up. Let's go.
Yeah.
Tapping everybody on the shin pads on the way out. It was just so fun to see the reaction. But he is a great leader, and he does it by presence. He does it by inspiring great plays. He does it by just saying the right thing at the right time. We were going through a rough time, like, against Washington Capitals. We're down 3-1, and Scotty's going, guys, we got to get our forecheck going. And Mario politely, like, so respectfully stood up and said, Scotty, it's not working. We got to change our forecheck. We got to go to a 1-4. And Scotty's, what do you do when your best player, one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, stands up and goes, it's not working? So Scotty goes, okay, Rick Kehoe, get up here. Show him the boys the 1-4. I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of presence Mario had. And the respect he had from coaches, players, the city. I mean, for him to win a second cup as an owner, there's not a guy who's a former teammate of his that's not happy for him and his family.
What was young Jagr like? Because it's amazing he's still playing, but the stories about
so
this man
fun.
Can you not stop.
Can you believe
so
he's still
fun.
Playing?
He's incredible. He was an incredible athlete. But to his credit, there's not a lot of wear and tear in his body. Like, he doesn't go out and bang people. He's a hard guy to hit. He's a big guy. So when you do hit him, you know, you get that, you know, well, the best I can hit him is get a little piece of him. But if you do hit him, he's got a big rear end, big legs, and he's a monster of a kid. And the game has changed so much. It's more speed. There's less banging. And there's not a lot of, like, hitting the best players in the league. So we're happy for him. We're proud of him. And he's still putting up great numbers. He's doing a great job down in Florida. We hope he continues to stay healthy and plays a long, long time, because it's a great reflection on him. And obviously, our old Penguin alumni, we cheer for him, and because of that, a little bit, the Florida Panther team. But I love Jarmer. He was I was his first roommate for about a month and a half.
Come
we
on.
Got no. It's like the oldest guy and the youngest guy. And I had my English to Czechoslovakian dictionary. I had his Czechoslovakian to English. He'd say Big Brian. He called me Big Brian, which is so funny. I don't know why he called me, because I was older than him. I was an old Brian, thank goodness. But he called me Big Brian. You do breakfast. I'm like, okay, I'll order breakfast. And I'd order him like whatever else. His favorite meal, like, I could not believe this kid, but for pregame meal, he'd have spaghetti with honey, like poured honey on this thing, and then sprinkle like a half a pound of sugar on this thing. I'm like, what are you doing? And then before the game, he'd have these, what he called, sugar buns that his mom would make, and he'd always bring two or three for me. And I'm like, Jarmer, I can't eat that much sugar before a game. Oh, sugar buns, very good. Mom make good. Oh, and they were delicious. But I like, he, for years he called me Big Brian. But the funniest story about Jarmer was when he had got his new car. He wanted a Trans Am, but he couldn't afford the insurance. And the car companies were a little nervous to give him a promotional car because of it. So Craig Patrick says, I'll co-sign for a car for you, Armour. But and that was part of his contract, apparently. He wanted Trans Am. So for a couple, well, maybe a month and a half, he'd come to the rink in this little Hugo. And you know Armour, a monster kid with the big hair. And so he looked like Lurch in this big car coming into the rink. And I live right across the street at the Washington apartment building, and I'd walk down, and I'd see the kind of chuckle to myself. And then one day, here he comes in this Trans Am, beep, beep, boom, boom, so proud of it, black, the big eagle on the top, and he's showing me everything. Look at the stereo, and da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, good luck with the Jarmer. And like, it wasn't a week later, he's back in that little Hugo. I'm like, what happened to the Trans Am? He goes, oh, Big Brian, hit deer. Deer is dead. Car is dead. Everything is dead. I said, how fast were you going? He goes, I don't know. Speed limit. I'm like, oh, he was one funny kid. He still is funny. Every time he sees me, he starts laughing. I start laughing. And we don't have to say anything. We just start giggling, because we were by the bench when I was in Buffalo, assistant coaching. Comes by the bench, and he starts talking to the players. And the players are like, oh, really, really? I said, what'd they say? He said, you are the best centerman he ever played with. I said, Bjarmer's pulling your leg there. He played with Mario, so I don't believe that stuff.
Yeah, he's a unique guy. Man, we could do this forever,
Brian.
We
need you for a week. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, next time you have a couple weeks, come to Calgary, and we'll do some radio
fun
with
stuff,
you.
Guys.
Congratulations on the Hall of Fame. Obviously, richly deserved. Your career is almost second to none. Pretty good for a small-town prairie boy.
Well, the Canada Sports Hall of Fame is kind of the pinnacle. It's the opportunity when your country says welcome home, and we're gonna see if you can inspire a bunch. And then really, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to inspire the next generation of athlete, and kind of, I guess, protect a little bit of Canada's history. So for us, like, meeting some of the other inductees that are there, I mean, it's really kind of inspiring. You know, you wanted to kind of cheer when we were watching some of the video of the previous inductees. And I told, you know, I'm sitting next to Sue Holloway, and I'm like, Sue, were there moments where you just want to stand up and cheer? She's like, it was such powerful moments for Canada, you know, when they're winning gold medals or the winning championships. And you know some of these guys. You've watched some of these guys, and they're great moments for Canada, the big Maple Leafs. So, oh, very proud of our Canadian blood and our Canadian heritage and all our Canadian athletes. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
There you
well
go.
Done.
Brian Trotche, the great Brian Trotche, our guest here. Quick break, coming back with another inductee into the Hall of Fame. Next, Sports at 960, The Fan.